Babe, there's just no spark.
Yeah. Kind of hurts you.
I had a bad time on the pot yesterday, so I could use a little active yeast.
Yeah.
Those are bad days. This smells incredible. Say cheers to episode 48 today. We have Christian back. Hey!
Yeah. Not dead. Surprisingly. Almost dead. Unfortunately. We had a little ATV accident when I was on vacation in Costa Rica, but it's all good. My torso is healing up nicely. It hurt pretty bad for a bit. Did a couple dollars damage to an ATV, but everything is good. Yeah. Pura vida. Pura vida, as they say.
Couple few dollars. All right, so in honor of Christian being not dead, we have some old friend whiskey from Guatemala.
I'm so excited to try this. I think.
Are you really?
I am, because I just believe I was the one that spotted it on the shelf. I'm like, yeah. Guatemala whiskey.
I wonder if this is actually produced in... So, yeah, you got to do the nose on this. I wonder if this is produced in Guatemala. I looked it up. There's not... There's, like, no information on this. It's in a little...
I'm surprised you're still alive. There's no information on this whiskey. But yet, I'm going to put it in my system.
250 milliliter, like, bootleg-style bottle. So, handy for carrying around, as one does. So, what are you whiffing on that?
I smell apple juice.
Oh, yeah.
Very, like, apple cider. Not a lot of bottle. I wonder if that's artificial color in there.
Maybe so. What this smells like to me is, like, rubber that's been sitting in a chlorinated pool.
I can't get away from the apple juice. I get a little bit of your chemicalness, though. Not quite as bad as an Evan Williams that I had this weekend, but...
Really?
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
It's all right.
All right. So, cheers.
Cheers.
It's more scotchy than bourbon-y.
I would say this kind of tastes like passport scotch.
Is that cheap?
That's like the cheapest scotch you can get. Kind of watery. What's the proof on here?
40.
40?
Not 40 proof. 40 ABV.
Yeah.
80.
Yeah.
80 proof.
That's pretty surprising since a lot of centrals like to drink 35. They actually water down their rum to 35. I made this realization when I was down in Guatemala and Costa Rica, and I was totally bummed out. So I'm used to drinking 40 to 50.
I was listening to a whiskey podcast the other day, and they were talking about, like, all barrel strength. They're just, like, super into the barrel strength, which I understand. And, but yeah, if you're even drinking 40 after you used to barrel proof, it doesn't seem like much. And then you go down to 35, 30. It's a liqueur at that point. So this is not the worst thing ever.
If I had some Coca-Cola, I would add this whiskey to the Coca-Cola, and it would be a refreshing beverage.
Yeah, or if you're at the club and you're going to do shots, like, it's probably a pretty decent cheap shot. This, I think, cost me, like, $4 to get this little...
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. $4 whiskey, not so bad. Yeah.
So that would have been, like, a $12, $7.50. Anyway, that's really all I have to say about that. I mean, the palate is apple juice and chlorine. And rubber.
Yeah.
Ugh. All right. So we're going to follow that up with something hopefully a little bit more enjoyable.
Yeah. So what I have for us here is some beer that I brewed before I left. So this is a Chinook IPA. This is like a part whole grain kit. And this is my first foray into brewing beer. So
it's super exciting.
So I drank a couple of them over the weekend. I'm still alive. So we know that it's safe.
You're indestructible now.
Yeah. I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah. So, Chinook hops, did those come in the kit?
Yeah, this came in the kit. So, it was a part extract and part whole grain. So, you steep the part of the grains and then you add an extract to the rest of it. So, it was half liquid malt, half powdered malt. Mm. And then, this was a three-stage hopping process. So... there was a bittering hop, there was a second hop, and then there was a dry hop, which we did like a week and a half before we bottled. And this has been aging in my basement for like 4 weeks, five weeks. Yeah.
So I get strawberries on the nose. I have, of course, some of the piney hops, but with some strawberries. This smells so good. It's really fruity. What's the ABV? You have any idea?
I have no idea, but it's a little lower than it was supposed to be, so I had a slightly more water, but I like a little bit of a lighter IPA. Mm. I don't like that syrupy texture.
Sure, well, it's not that.
No, and it's nice, it's crisp,
mm-hmm.
and the only thing I was really concerned about this first pass was making sure everything was sterilized 100%, sanitized 100%. The last thing that I want to do is get a whole bunch of people sick, myself included, on my first batch of beer. So I think we're going to try to brew another one this weekend.
Cool. I like it. I would buy that. So now we're off. We're going to talk today, and I didn't even give you guys a preview. We're going to talk about when Farm to Cup goes bad, not involving ATVs. But we source Farm to Cup direct trade. We try and source through as many direct relationships, not as many direct relationships, but source as much coffee through direct relationships as we can. And that comes with a wide array of challenges and opens us up to some maybe not so much as fun coffee experiences.
It's vulnerabilities. It really is. Sure. The minute you open yourself up to a relationship, you become...
That's a good analogy.
It really is the same thing as just like a normal relationship. Like the minute you open up, you accept a lot of trust and there's a lot of things that become vulnerable. And sometimes you love everything that you see. Sometimes there's some weird stuff that goes on, and you're like, well, what happened here? And sometimes it's just a problem that you need to communicate with, and sometimes you realize that maybe the relationship isn't the best fit.
And I think we should also reflect, too, so we'll start from the roaster's perspective, like what are some of the, and I think we'll just speak from experience, what are some of the things we've encountered, some of the things that have been hard about Farm to Cup for us, and then even to put ourselves at the end in the place of the producer. Because I'm sure there are plenty of producers that have gotten screwed by roasters. And it's hard, you know, it takes a commitment to not screw somebody in a relationship. Reflecting back now, Christian, on how many years of sourcing coffee?
Four full years.
Okay.
Four and a half, something like that.
So I've been around for a few snafus.
A lot of things can go wrong. Let's just put it out there. We're dealing with We're dealing with organic substances, aka coffee seeds, that have to travel thousands and thousands of miles in ideal conditions. And sometimes the coffee doesn't arrive like it's supposed to. And sometimes there's nothing anyone can do about it. Sometimes there are things that you could probably have controlled better on either side of the equation. For example, we had a container of coffee. This was maybe year 1.5. And we found like a really good deal on some coffee from Tanzania. And the coffee, when we cupped it, was pretty good. Like, it was pretty good for what it was. It was like an 83. We're going to use it in kind of our blends. We were like, okay, let's ship it. Let's do it. And 1 month goes by. They're like, has it arrived yet? Nope. It's coming. Okay, good. Second month goes by, like, where's our coffee? And I finally got my shipping info, and like, it's in India. Why is it in India? And then month three comes, and it's already been 3 months on the water. It arrives to New Jersey and then to Chicago. And we're talking with our shipping people, and I was like, hey, so can we pull our container now? And they're like, yeah, just give us the bill of lading, the document that you need to take control of the container. I'm like, well, you guys have it, right? And they're like, no, do you have it? Some guy in Tanzania had it, went missing. So we had to...
Missing.
We had to work a deal to remake the bill of lading, pay a bunch of money to make this happen. The other side of the relationship had to pay a little bit of money to make this happen too. Coffee gets here, we cup it, and it tastes slightly fermented. And it tastes slightly old, which makes sense because
you're so optimistic.
No. We're tasting it. It's like it's not how we're supposed to.
Yeah, it was pretty rough.
And this actually ended up being a good story because the partner on the other side understood what happened and was gracious enough to offer to replace. This doesn't happen every day.
No.
They were a good, really good partner, and they replaced the entire container with another lot, which was more than gracious of them to do, and we had a successful run with that coffee. It was still a little old, but that's a lot of things that went wrong with just one container.
Yeah, that was the perfect storm. Like, if you think about coffee traveling, like, there are things that can go wrong there. It's the logistics. It's the fact that you load this coffee into a big steel container where it's subject to temperature variation. If it's not controlled really well, it could be subject to humidity issues. And even though the coffee's in Grain Pro, it can only withstand that kind of stuff up to a certain level. So getting coffee from A to B is hard. And when you're working with an importer, they do it all. When you're not, you do it all. Or you work with companies to try and coordinate this. And it's not easy stuff.
Yeah, as Drew said, if you're working with an importer, typically if that coffee's late, they would let you know and be like, hey, you might want to check this out. And the term of your contract might actually be something like subject approval sample. So if you don't approve it, you have a built-in safety net. Whereas when you're working direct with partners at origin, that isn't always the case.
Yeah, you get a pre-ship sample and you approve it, and then it's shipped, and then you may be stuck with it.
Yep. So we had another container situation. These are the two big situations, and we get smaller from there. So we've actually been really lucky.
We're just grabbing your attention.
So we had a container arrive from Brazil. This was actually like year point two.
Your first week. This was before my stint at Stone Creek.
And so we had a container, and this is a longer-term relationship for us in the past. I think we were working with this partner for 3 years, 4 years, and we had negotiated a long-term contract, which can be good in most situations. Like, if a producer needs stability and you're looking for stability on the roasting part, as long as you can come to an agreement on what that price should be and it works out for both of you, awesome. There had been some volatility in terms of contract negotiations, like market went up, so they wanted to renegotiate the terms of the contract, so on and so forth. Anyways, we get this coffee in, we're tasting it, and it tastes like shoe leather, which coffee should never taste like shoe leather unless something's gone bad.
And if Christian says it tastes like shoe leather, it was bad.
It was bad. We were working with Tracy Allen at the time, so he was here working through it. He just looks at it, it's like, dude, this stuff is junk. This stuff isn't good. Like, we renegotiate this. And we ended up breaking the relationship. We sold the coffee back to them.
Did we take a loss on
that? To get out of the position.
Sure.
And we broke a 4-year relationship because of
Coffee quality.
And that was our first lesson in terms of, like, the coffee quality needs to match what we're coming in. It's not just about forming a relationship and sponsoring all these programs at origin. The coffee quality always needs to win.
Yeah.
And we were very lucky again to get out of that situation. We could have been stuck with an entire container of coffee that was, the producer could have just been like, yeah, sure, whatever, it's yours, you paid for it, no remorse. And dealing with international contracts is super difficult. Because if everything happens in the United States, we have a court of laws and systems to deal with stuff. But the minute you go into international laws, if the two governments don't want to talk to each other, or the government doesn't find the other person at fault, they're like, nope. Whatever, you're out of money.
Yeah.
$200,000, that's, nope, not doing it.
One thing you said I think is important to keep in mind is, I think from a public perspective, we can look at coffee buying as a social cause. Like, out of the benevolence of our hearts, we're buying coffee. No. I mean, like, you can buy coffee for a cause, and many companies do it, and you can buy coffee from certain origins for impact, and that's super cool, and we try and do that too. Like, we try and have an impact with how we buy coffee. That said, like, we can't sustain impact and we can't sustain buying without the coffee being good. Like, our market position is the upper end of the market. Like, it's higher quality. So if the quality is not there, there's not jack we can do with bad coffee. And so, like, it has to go both ways. We can only be so benevolent if there's good coffee to be had.
So those are the two worst scenarios that we've had. Well, let's talk about a couple of them that have crept up kind of recently.
Yeah.
And they're more interesting things that are happening in terms of coffee and things that are kind of unpredictable. So we're learning more and more, like, long time ago being like 4 years, Grain Pro is coming onto the market. So, okay, you want to have all your coffee stored in plastic bags inside of jute bags, preserve the coffee longer. Awesome.
Yeah, I love how we call it Grain Pro when it's really just a big plastic bag.
Yeah.
It's a Grain Pro, like it's this super edgy technology. It's a big plastic bag. Yeah,
it's one way permeable, so at least you can breathe out.
Okay.
Still suffocated.
It's helpful. So yeah. The fact that it wasn't a thing and it became a thing, that's innovation.
So your coffee used to travel thousands of miles just in like mesh bags. Mm-hmm. That's never good.
No.
That's why the Italians started dark roast coffee in the first place, guys. We're learning things about moisture levels. So we get a moisture meter and like, okay, the moisture needs to be between 10 and 12% when coffee arrives. Okay, good. And then we learn more about finding defects and like, okay, we actually had a coffee one time that when it arrived, the defects were not milled out. And we were like, what happened here? Because we had bought an entire container from this group and one lot. And to boggle our minds further, one bag was perfect, four bags were bad.
So these bags, you're saying that normally a producer or a green coffee exporter will filter basically green coffee.
Yeah, they'll
coffee.
Go through and sort out all the bad coffee.
Yeah.
And we pull it out and we're like, this doesn't look right. And we roasted it, it didn't taste right. So we went to a different bag, and that bag was fine. So I ended up going through, sorting everything. I sent the producer or the exporter some feedback. We had already started roasting it in production because that first bag was awesome. And we just like, okay, we already have this coffee here. It's not that bad. And it really was not that bad comparatively. So we just said, okay, we'll take it. We're already in the middle of production. But if this happens again, and the exporter was actually really happy to get that feedback. He's like, no, I'll refund everything. I'll make it right. And like, the coffee's still okay.
All right. And so that wasn't good.
And then there's something that happens that we're learning more about this. And there's info from like the last 2 years on there that not just moisture is important for coffee, but water activity, the amount of activity, how quickly water evaporates out of the coffee can cause damage and can kind of be tethered to shelf life of the coffee.
So basically, your coffee needs to be relatively stable in terms of water activity.
Yeah, you can't. I'm trying to think of a good analogy here. Like, when you're trying to dry something out.
Stillness, the difference between a crouton and a piece of bread.
Crouton, piece of bread, or cake. I think the cake is a good analogy because if you bake a cake perfectly, like the inside is intact, it's nice and moist, and the outside's just a little crusty on the outside.
Just a little bit.
But if you dry it too fast, like the water leaves too quickly and it becomes like a brick.
Dry, yeah.
Or if it's too low and you don't have enough heat, it's all mush on the inside. So that's really what water activity is. And what can happen is that the water activity is bad on your coffee. It can actually fade really quickly.
So it speeds up your aging process.
Yeah. So we got it in house. We cupped it as soon as it got here. It tasted like it should have. Great. Check it 2 months later. Tastes great. Check it another 2 months later. I'm like, what the heck happened to this coffee? This isn't the same coffee we had. And it just went really quickly. And to our, I suppose,
all of us,
our fault.
Yeah. So we run different coffees at different ages. Like some coffees will hold up to green age pretty well and others not so much. And we're just scratching the surface now of like, how do we run inventory to absolutely maintain freshness? Like we're a first in, first out generally kind of inventory system, but with the micro lots, we only run so many micro lots at one time. So what happens when we buy micro lots early in the season and then we're running Colombias all year? We can't run 6 Colombias at once. And then we get 8 months down the road after harvest, and oh, shoot, this one's a little old. So now we don't buy so many Colombian micro lots. Or
you need to do more quality control checks early on.
Yeah, I mean, if you can nail down exactly the variables that cause the aging, maybe you can mitigate them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of work that we have to do as a farm-to-cup sourcer to say, what kind of coffees do we source? How do we control quality when we're sourcing so we know how to use this coffee, you know, 6 months from now, 3 months optimally, but 6 months, or if we have to, 9 to 12 months later, you know, what kind of coffees are going to hold up? How can we predict if they're going to hold up? to mitigate the risk of getting a really burlappy tasting coffee, which is what happens when it gets old. It tends to taste like burlap or what else? Like, there's got to be a better tasting note. Burlap's my only old tasting note.
It's like licking a wood board.
Wood.
Yeah, it really is.
Grass, like dry grass.
Dry grass. It just loses all of its sweetness. It loses all of its acidity. And you just kind of have this husk of what once was. Mm. We used to think that it was caused by the burlap, and there's a defect called bagginess that actually is the transfer of burlap to the coffee. But even in grain pro bags, like, this still happens.
Yeah.
So
it's just
the degradation of coffee.
Which makes sense that the coffee would degrade. I mean, it's still somewhat moist. It's still somewhat alive. It's not super shelf stable, so it makes total sense that as it gets older, it would taste more yucky. To use a super elaborate, advanced scientific term, yucky.
And so just for your knowledge out there, listeners, once a coffee's turned bad, there's really nothing you can do to save it. And we've been trying for a while to think of creative ways to make a coffee taste better. If we still had a flavored coffee program, that might be one way to make it happen.
Maybe.
But a really good micro lot that's turned, you got to find a home for it because we got to use it. We can't just throw the coffee away. So you might find it as a dark roast or part of a dark roast. That's just...
Yeah, and roast does tend to cover up that bagginess a little bit. Well, I mean, light roast showcases the age, whereas a dark roast, you're expecting nuttiness. You're expecting dark chocolate, smoke, roast. so the woodiness tends to actually play better with that flavor profile. It's still there, but it just works better for that particular product and the taste profile you're wanting to accomplish.
You know the other thing you can do if you have woody coffee? Sell it to a Greek. Believe it or not, they buy that profile.
Really?
Just really.
Generally Greeks?
Yeah, like the phenolic Brazils.
Kind of racist.
They will go through and actually buy phenolic because they love the spicy, woody phenolic flavor.
I mean,
just
so
like some people like scotch.
I
for
adore
some reason.
Scotch, but I despise phenols in my coffee. Yeah. And so what I have learned, though, is I'm not a big fan of the peated Islay. Like a lightly peated scotch I'm down with, just a little bit. Like Johnny Walker Black is a pretty good example of adding a little bit of smoke into your scotch. But if you get into the heavily peated scotches like Laphroaig or Ardbeg, it's just too much. Like, gives me reflux. It's a complicated world, beverages.
So
what else can
in terms of things that can go wrong, like we talked a lot about coffee quality. The relationships can fall apart. Contracts can fall apart. You could get to a point where the producer's like, hey, we need more money for this coffee because it actually costs us more.
But like we... only so much money in the pocket.
Then. Yeah. And so there's lots of weird things. Sometimes they're not able to deliver on terms of quantity. And sometimes it's an innocent mistake or like they've had problems with coffee rust or something. Mm-hmm. They really can't do volume. Other times a producer might be trying to take advantage of you. This hasn't happened to us as far as I know.
Yeah, we really work with some pretty solid producers.
But I could see a situation where like, oh yeah, yeah, you can have 20 bags. Like, oh, we really didn't have enough of that, so you can have 4 bags. That to me is like, don't work with that producer. Make sure they take care of you because there are enough coffee producers out there that they want to build long-term lasting relationships.
Yeah, yeah, if somebody pulled that, we tend to be kind of a no BS company too. So if somebody said, hey, well, you could have 20 bags and then offered us 4, it'd be like, yeah, we'll take no bags, actually. Cute, though. And again, by and large, our partners are really phenomenal. They're really gracious. They're thankful for the business, and they'll listen when we give them QC feedback, quality feedback. And they'll even do, like many of our partners have done, some sort of experimenting or special processing for us, which is pretty cool when you can say, hey, can you do this for me on my coffee? They say, sure. Yeah, no problem. Okay. Thanks.
Therein lies a huge risk for the producer. I'm going to transition us.
Yeah, that does.
Because when a roaster says, like, hey, man, I want you to try this process, that producer, if they're smart, is going to get that in writing. And say, this is what we're contracting for, buddy.
And you're going to buy it if I do it?
You buy it if I do it, and if it goes wrong, whatever. Unless there's, like, some shared agreement that, you know, you were just going to throw it away, whatever. Because it's going to be extra labor, extra work, extra vigilance. And if it doesn't turn out, it's going to suck if that roaster sticks you with it. It's going to break up the relationship. And I've heard of that happening before, where people are like, yeah, dude, we're going to contract for 40 bags. And then they call them up like, no, we only need 20. No, we only need 10. Like, no, dude, yeah. I already picked the coffee. We did all the work. It's here now because you said you'd take it. It's in writing. This relationship is going bad. We got to do something about it.
If you're going to ask somebody to do something, I guess you have to be willing to accept the outcome. I mean, it just goes with commitment. It's like you get married, right? I mean, you marry a person. Like, hopefully you understand who you're marrying.
It's like if you are in a relationship and you decide you want to get a dog, and then a dog sucks, you still agree to get the dog.
Yeah, right, you're stuck with the dog.
You could sell the dog to someone else, maybe.
Right. Just don't be mean to the dog.
Don't be mean to the dog. So other things that happens with producers at Origin with when relationships go bad, I think sometimes they try too hard to lure in roasters and try to show like how they're so great and they're not thinking in terms of like long-term stability. We need to find a partner that's going to buy, like someone who focuses too much on micro lots, for example. A lot of our partners are very responsible producers, but there are some who go out there. Like I met a guy in Panama who is like in an area where they don't normally grow specialty coffee, and they're like, yeah, we're gonna grow all geisha over here. Like that is a mistake waiting to happen, and someone's gonna commit to it. They're gonna taste it and be like, no, we don't want it, and that guy's gonna be screwed. Guy's going to be screwed. It was at 1200 meters above sea level, and he's gonna plant all geisha. Didn't have a plan for a mill. There is no mill in this part of the country. And he's like, I'm just going to do this, and I'm going to find roasters, and they're going to want it. I'm like, this is not going to end out well for you, guy.
Yeah. There have been too many geishas that taste like your average coffee. And if you're going to do that kind of crap, you need to pull a good price for it. Geisha scares me. So much scares me. Like, it's the idea that we're going to bank on this one thing. And it's going to carry us, this one concept, this one customer, this one product, and our industry will forever exist. Like, welcome to the housing market 2008, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, listening too much to a roaster is not a smart idea when you're a coffee producer.
No.
Because, and I'm actually working the other direction here. I have a couple friends who are just starting out being coffee farmers, and like, dude, what should I grow? Should I grow geisha? Should I grow this? Should I grow this? Like, no.
Like, maybe you want to like plant three geisha plants. Yeah. Like, maybe three.
Grow as much variety as you can. Figure out what that land wants, and then you'll find a buyer that matches that. Think about long-term stability at Origin. And then maybe if there's an opportunity down the road to plant like a variety garden or something special, do that. But think about your long-term business first.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think that's being a responsible buyer and a responsible friend.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, dude, just grow geisha.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, so if you're a roaster who wants geisha because there's a crazy market for geisha across the world right now, then, you know, then you can take advantage of a producer. Say, grow geisha, and then you buy it off them for the cheap if it's good stuff. But if you want them to be healthy long term, it's not putting all their eggs in the geisha basket, because what if it never comes out? Or what if the geisha market disappears? Or what if a disease comes in after 10 years that really likes geisha? You're just screwed. So, yeah, I think eyes on true sustainability is super important. Like, it, whether you're the producer or you're the roaster, like, you need to honor your commitments. That's important. You need to have an eye on quality control. That's super important. I mean, set solid expectations and keep them. We've talked to producers that don't like to work with roasters because the roasters were a pain in the butt to work with. And, you know, we have particular producers we don't like to work with anymore because they're a pain in the butt to work with. It goes both ways. You know, you want to have a healthy, solid personal relationship and affinity for each other. Like, you want to like who you're working with. But at the end of the day, it's a business. It's a coffee business, and that business is built on setting expectations and meeting expectations, just like it is from us to our customers, right? I mean, you don't buy your drip coffee out of benevolence. Like, you don't buy your drip coffee because, hey, you want to make sure that Eric Resch has enough to eat. Like, you do it because this is good coffee, and we say farm to cup, and we deliver it, and we say the baristas care, and we pull great espresso, and we roast our coffee right, and so then you come in and drink it. So, yep, I think they're doing what they said. Otherwise, you'd go buy coffee somewhere else, which is okay if we don't hold up our end of the bargain. Cool. What's next?
Let's talk about coffee festivals in general, or coffee events, because there are so many of them that are happening. There's the SCA event in Seattle. There's Coffee Fest going on. I think there are four of them going on. There's Coffee Con. What do you need to know as a coffee fanatic, as most of you podcast listeners are, and what benefit would you get for going to some of these events? Because in my opinion, some events are better than others for coffee geeks, some are for coffee pros, and some of the events are for no one but like the higher ups of the business.
Sure, yeah, I think that's a super interesting topic. It's super interesting for me to talk about, I'll put it that way. I enjoyed talking about that stuff. SEA is a unique animal for sure, and it's hard not to be sort of blown away by SEA and its scale.
Please notice that we're saying SCA as it's no longer the SCAA, because we have merged together the SCAA and the SCAE of America and Europe into one mega unit.
Yep. Global government, it's happening. The Left Behind books are becoming real. So that'll be fun to digest the nature of that event, as well as some of the more local coffee festivals. All right, till then, you can go online and binge listen at stonecreekcoffee.com/podcasts. You can email us your topic ideas at podcast@stonecreekcoffee.com. You can reach out to us on Twitter and Instagram at Stone Creek Coffee. Really, we just want to hear from you and network about coffee and give you brewing hacks and answer your home brewing questions. We follow up on the emails that are sent to us.
We sure do follow up.
Every one so far. All right, guys, till next time, we are geeks.
And we are talking coffee.